A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been staring at his Amazon and AliExpress apps and realized he has no idea who's actually selling him things. He's got four questions. First, what's a marketplace anyway, and why does it feel like you're buying from the platform itself when you're usually not? Second, Amazon's FBA program is enormous and well documented. Does AliExpress have anything like it? Third, how do payments and refunds actually work inside these systems? And fourth, has anyone tried to count how many products are on Amazon, and how much of that's direct sales versus third-party sellers? It's the kind of thing you never think about until you do, and then you can't stop.
And once you start looking, the numbers are genuinely staggering. Let's pull back the curtain on how these two giants actually operate.
So what even is a marketplace, at the structural level? Because the word gets thrown around constantly.
A marketplace is a platform that facilitates transactions between independent buyers and sellers and takes a cut. It never touches the inventory. Think of it as a digital bazaar. You're renting a stall, but the bazaar owner isn't making the rugs.
And that's the thing Daniel's poking at. Amazon muddies this completely, because it does sell its own stuff. Amazon Basics batteries, Kindle devices, those god-awful button-down shirts they tried to push a few years back.
The technical term is a hybrid marketplace. Amazon operates as both a retailer and a platform. They buy inventory, hold it, price it, sell it. That's first-party retail, what they call Amazon retail. But the vast majority of what moves through Amazon never touches their books as owned inventory. Over 60% of units sold on Amazon come from independent third-party sellers. That's from their own 2025 Small Business Empowerment Report.
60%. So when someone says, I bought it on Amazon, more often than not, they bought it from a guy named Kevin in Milwaukee, who ships his inventory to Amazon's warehouse and never actually meets the customer.
And AliExpress is different. AliExpress is a pure marketplace. They've never owned a single phone case. They're a storefront, a digital shelf where Chinese manufacturers and small sellers list products directly to global buyers. The platform handles the listing, the payment, the dispute resolution, but the seller handles everything physical.
So the core structural difference, and this is where everything else flows from, is that Amazon's model is built around logistics and warehousing, and AliExpress is built around cross-border parcel shipping.
Right. And that difference shapes every single thing about how these platforms feel to use. Let's start with the engine room, how FBA actually works.
FBA, fulfillment by Amazon, the thing that makes Prime possible.
Here's the flow. A seller, say, someone who designed a kitchen gadget, manufactures 1,000 units. They don't store them in their garage. They ship the entire pallet to an Amazon fulfillment center. Amazon receives it, catalogs it, stores it on their shelves. When you click buy, an Amazon employee or robot picks that item, packs it in an Amazon-branded box, and ships it. Amazon also handles customer service and returns for those orders.
And the seller pays for all of this.
They pay inbound shipping to the warehouse, monthly storage fees based on cubic footage, and a per-unit pick-and-pack fee when the item sells, plus the referral fee, 8 to 15% of the sale price depending on category. In return, the product gets the Prime badge, which is the single most important conversion driver on the platform. Over 70% of third-party sellers use FBA. It's the dominant fulfillment method.
So the seller gives up margin and control, and in exchange, they get access to the Prime customer base, and they don't have to think about logistics.
Which, for a small business, is transformative. You can be a one-person operation and have your product show up on doorsteps in 2 days with Amazon's branding on the box. The customer never knows you exist. That's the illusion Daniel's talking about.
And AliExpress?
No direct FBA equivalent at that scale. The seller holds their own inventory, usually in a small warehouse or apartment in Shenzhen or Yiwu, and when an order comes in, they pack it themselves and ship it, typically through China Post or through Kainiao, which is Alibaba's logistics arm.
Kainiao. That's the one that's basically built a global shipping network, optimized for small parcels.
Yeah, and it's impressive in its own way. Kanyao has partnerships with local last-mile carriers in something like 200 countries. They've built consolidation warehouses where multiple sellers' packages get bundled into a single shipment to clear customs more efficiently. But the fundamental difference remains. The seller is doing the picking and packing, not AliExpress.
There's something called fulfillment by AliExpress, though, right? I've seen it mentioned.
FBAE. It exists, but it's not the backbone of the platform the way FBA is for Amazon. AliExpress has been quietly building out overseas warehouses, some in Europe, some in Southeast Asia, where sellers can pre-position inventory for faster delivery. They've also got something called AliExpress Choice, which is a curated selection of products that ship from those warehouses with a 10-day delivery guarantee. But the documentation is thin, the adoption numbers aren't public, and it's clearly still experimental compared to the FBA machine.
So if you're a seller on AliExpress, you're mostly on your own for fulfillment, which explains the shipping times.
15 to 30 days is standard for the cheap stuff, sometimes 45. The trade-off is that you don't have the upfront capital risk of shipping 1,000 units to a warehouse and paying storage fees whether they sell or not.
Let's talk about money. How do payments actually flow in each system?
Amazon's model is straightforward in concept, but has a lot of moving parts. When a customer buys from a third-party seller, Amazon collects the payment. They hold those funds in a separate seller account. It's not pooled with Amazon's own operating cash. They pay out on a schedule, typically every 14 days. But from that payout, they deduct the referral fee, the FBA fees if applicable, any advertising costs the seller ran, and any chargebacks or refunds that happened in that cycle.
So Amazon is the merchant of record for the customer, but they're essentially running a pass-through accounting system for the seller.
Right? The customer sees Amazon on their credit card statement. The seller sees a net deposit that arrives 2 weeks later with a dozen line items deducted.
And AliExpress?
AliExpress uses an escrow-like system. The buyer pays, AliExpress holds the money, and the seller doesn't get paid until the buyer confirms receipt or the delivery window expires. This is the fundamental protection mechanism. The seller has skin in the game until the item is in your hands.
Which makes sense when you're ordering from a factory you've never heard of in a city you can't pronounce.
The buyer protection window is typically 60 days, sometimes extended to 90 for certain shipping methods. If you don't confirm receipt, the system auto-releases the funds after the window closes. But if you open a dispute before then, the money stays frozen while AliExpress mediates.
And refunds? This is where things get interesting.
Amazon has the A to Z guarantee. If an item doesn't arrive or is materially different from the listing, the buyer files a claim. Amazon investigates, they look at tracking data, message history between buyer and seller, return records, and if they find in the buyer's favor, they refund from the seller's account. The seller can appeal, but Amazon's default posture is heavily buyer-friendly.
Which creates the frictionless return experience that customers now expect everywhere. Print a label. Drop it at Whole Foods. Money's back in your account before you get to your car.
And the seller eats the return shipping, the restocking inspection, and often the product itself if it can't be resold as new. It's brutal for margins, but it's the cost of access to the customer base.
AliExpress refunds work differently, because the economics of return shipping break the model.
This is the part people get wrong. The misconception is that refunds on AliExpress are impossible. They're not. The buyer protection program is real and functional. But the mechanics are completely different, because when a phone case costs $2.99 with free shipping, nobody is paying $8 to ship it back to Shenzhen.
So what happens?
The buyer files a dispute. Item didn't arrive. Item is broken. Item doesn't match the description. They upload photos or video as evidence. The seller responds. AliExpress reviews and often issues a refund without requiring a return. For low-value items, the platform has essentially decided that the cost of reverse logistics exceeds the value of the goods.
Which creates a weird incentive. If you know you can get a refund without sending the item back.
Refund fraud is a real problem on the platform. Buyers claim non-receipt even when the item arrived. Sellers have started fighting back with more aggressive evidence requirements. Some now ship with video recording of the packing process, or use track shipping even for cheap items, so there's a delivery confirmation. But for items under about $5, many sellers just refund and move on because fighting the dispute costs more in time than the product is worth.
It's almost a built-in shrinkage cost. like a retail store budgeting for shoplifting.
That's exactly the right analogy. And the flip side is that sellers sometimes game it too, shipping empty boxes or broken items, knowing that a certain percentage of buyers won't bother with the dispute process, especially if the language barrier makes it frustrating.
So both sides are running a probabilistic calculation about whether the other party will follow through. It's a marketplace held together by mutual low-grade suspicion and statistical tolerance.
And yet, it works. Billions of dollars move through this system every year.
Which brings us to Daniel's fourth question. How big are these things? Has anyone actually counted?
Amazon doesn't publish an official catalog count. The best estimates from third-party tracking firms put it somewhere between 350 million and 600 million products. But that number is slippery because it includes variations. The same t-shirt in 4 sizes and 7 colors counts as 28 listings. It includes duplicates where multiple sellers list the same ASIN. It includes items that are technically listed but out of stock or abandoned.
So the real number of distinct products is lower, but nobody knows exactly how much lower.
The 350 million figure is the most commonly cited conservative estimate as of 2025. For context, Walmart's online catalog is somewhere around 60 million, so Amazon is roughly 5 to 10 times larger in terms of listed products.
And within that catalog, how much is Amazon selling directly versus third party?
Amazon retail, first party sales, accounts for roughly 15 to 20% of units sold. That includes their private label brands like Amazon Basics, their device business, and the products they buy wholesale and resell. The other 80-plus percent is third-party sellers. And within that third-party slice, FBA is the dominant fulfillment method. North of 70% of those sellers use it.
So the typical Amazon purchase is a third-party seller's product, fulfilled by Amazon's warehouses, arriving in an Amazon box, with Amazon handling the return. The seller is almost entirely invisible.
And that invisibility is the product. Amazon has spent 25 years building logistics infrastructure so that buying from a stranger on the internet feels exactly like buying from a department store. It's an extraordinary achievement in trust manufacturing.
AliExpress doesn't even try to create that illusion. You know you're buying from a stranger. The seller's store name is prominent. Their rating is right there. The shipping estimate says 20 to 40 days. And the product photos look like they were taken in a fluorescent-lit warehouse because they were.
And that transparency shapes buyer behavior differently. On Amazon, you barely look at the seller name. On AliExpress, you're checking the store's rating, how long they've been operating, the number of orders, the review photos. You're doing your own trust assessment because the platform isn't doing it for you.
Let's talk about the knock-on effect of these different models. What does FBA do to the seller ecosystem?
FBA creates a flywheel. Fast shipping and prime eligibility drive more sales, which attracts more sellers, which expands selection, which attracts more customers. But it also concentrates enormous power in Amazon's hands. They set the storage fees. They can change the fee structure with 30 days' notice. They control the buy box algorithm that determines which seller gets the sale when multiple people list the same product.
And storage fees create a brutal incentive. If your inventory isn't moving, you're paying for cubic footage every month. Amazon will even charge you long-term storage fees or disposal fees if your stuff sits too long.
Which means FBA sellers have to be good at demand forecasting. Send too little inventory and you stock out, lose ranking, lose sales. Send too much and you're bleeding storage fees on dead stock. It's a constant optimization problem, and Amazon has all the data.
Whereas the AliExpress seller's risk profile is completely different. They don't have warehouse fees, but they have currency risk, shipping delay risk, and the ever-present possibility that a batch of orders gets lost in customs, and they eat the refunds.
And the margins are razor thin. When you're selling a phone case for $2.99 with free international shipping, your profit per unit might be 30 or 40 cents. You need enormous volume to make it work, and one bad month of disputes can wipe you out.
The refund asymmetry is fascinating from a systems perspective. On Amazon, the return process is frictionless for the buyer, but expensive for the seller. On AliExpress, the refund process is higher friction for the buyer, but often cheaper for the seller, because they're refunding the $2 without paying return shipping.
It creates a strange equilibrium. Amazon's model assumes the item is worth returning. AliExpress's model assumes it's not, and both assumptions are usually correct for their respective price points.
What about the future? Are these models converging?
AliExpress is definitely pushing in Amazon's direction. The Choice program with 10-day delivery is a direct shot at the Prime experience. They're building more overseas warehouses. They're investing in Kenya's logistics network to compress shipping times. But they're starting from a completely different place. Cross-border parcel shipping from Chinese warehouses versus a domestic network of fulfillment centers in every major metro area.
Amazon is pushing in the other direction, too. Expanding their marketplace into more categories, recruiting more international sellers, building out cross-border capabilities, but their core advantage is still the domestic logistics machine.
The thing that's hard to replicate is the last-mile network. Amazon has delivery stations, their own fleet of vans, their own air cargo operation. AliExpress is dependent on local postal services and third-party carriers for that final step. Kainiao can get a package from Shenzhen to a consolidation center in Los Angeles efficiently, but once it leaves that center, it's in the hands of USPS or a regional carrier.
The fundamental difference persists. Amazon's model is, put inventory close to the customer before they order. AliExpress's model is, ship it from the factory after they order.
That's not going to change quickly. Building a domestic fulfillment network takes years and billions of dollars. Amazon's been at it since the late 90s.
One thing I want to circle back to, the trust manufacturing. Amazon has basically built a system where the platform's reputation substitutes for the seller's reputation. You don't need to trust Kevin in Milwaukee because you trust Amazon. And Amazon has vetted Kevin and handles the logistics and will refund you if something goes wrong.
It's a reputation intermediary. And that's enormously valuable for sellers who are just starting out and have no brand recognition. But it also means they're dependent on Amazon's continued goodwill. If Amazon decides to compete with your product, and they do this, they have data on what sells. You're suddenly competing against the platform itself, with Amazon Basics or one of their other private labels.
There's an inherent conflict of interest in the hybrid model. Amazon is both the marketplace operator and a participant in the marketplace. They set the rules and also play the game.
They can see everyone's sales data. They know exactly which products are profitable, which categories are growing, which price points are working. That's information no other seller on the platform has access to at that level of granularity.
AliExpress doesn't have that conflict because they don't sell their own products. But they have a different problem. They don't control the quality or consistency of what's being sold. The platform is awash in counterfeit goods, misleading listings, and products that look nothing like the photos.
The trade-off is openness versus curation. AliExpress is more open. Anyone with a product and a shipping account can list. Amazon is more curated. The barriers to entry are higher, the performance requirements are stricter, and the consequences for failing to meet them are immediate.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original observation. The confusion about who you're buying from is actually a feature, not a bug. Amazon has deliberately blurred the line between first-party and third-party sales, because the seamless experience is what keeps customers coming back.
It works. Most people have no idea that over 60% of what they buy on Amazon isn't sold by Amazon. They see the Prime logo, the Amazon box, the easy returns, and they assume it's all one store.
Whereas on AliExpress, you can't miss it. The site looks like a marketplace. It feels like a marketplace. The experience is fragmented across thousands of independent sellers with different shipping times, different packaging, different levels of English proficiency in their product descriptions.
There's a certain honesty to it. You know what you're getting into.
You know you're rolling the dice on a $3 gadget that might take 6 weeks to arrive and might not work when it does. And that's priced in.
The price reflects the uncertainty.
Ilbert, you've been quiet back there.
I ran a mail order catalog business in the late 90s. Novelty ties.
Of course you did.
412 different ties. I had a fax machine for orders. When someone wanted a refund, they had to call me on a landline and explain why. I'd write them a check and mail it. Took 2 weeks.
You were doing manually what these platforms now automate, at a scale of millions of transactions per day.
I lost $40 once. Customer claimed the musical Christmas tie never arrived. I had the postal receipt, I had the delivery confirmation, I sent copies of everything. His credit card company charged me back anyway, $40. I still remember the amount.
That's the escrow problem in a nutshell. The payment processor sided with the buyer, and you had no recourse.
AliExpress's system would have driven me insane. The idea that the buyer gets the money held until they say they got the product. I'd have had inventory sitting in a warehouse in Connecticut while my cash was frozen in some digital escrow account in China for 60 days. I wouldn't have lasted a month.
But the flip side is that, as a buyer on AliExpress, you've actually used that system.
I ordered a $5 USB fan 2 years ago, never showed up. I filed a dispute, uploaded a screenshot of the tracking that hadn't moved in 40 days, and they refunded me in about a week. Didn't have to return anything. There was nothing to return.
You got your $5 back, and the seller was out the fan and the shipping cost.
Seller probably got paid anyway. The delivery window expired, the escrow released the funds automatically, and AliExpress ate the refund out of their own pocket to keep me happy. That's how it works on the cheap stuff. The platform takes the hit.
Wait, so the seller shipped a fan that got lost somewhere between Shenzhen and your mailbox. The 60-day window closed. AliExpress released the money to the seller, and then when you complained, they refunded you from their own balance sheet?
That's what the dispute resolution page said. Refund issued by AliExpress.
That's actually a really elegant solution to the trust problem. The platform ensures the transaction. The seller gets paid regardless, the buyer gets their money back, and AliExpress prices that loss into their overall fee structure.
It's a $5 insurance policy that costs them maybe a dollar in expected value. Cheaper than investigating every lost package.
You're still annoyed about the $40 from 1997.
It was a very nice tie. Played jingle bells when you pressed a button.
I have so many questions about the novelty tie business.
Margins were good until the internet killed it.
I feel like we could do a whole episode on that, but we should probably wrap this up. If you take one thing from this conversation, it's that the seamlessness of buying on Amazon is a carefully constructed illusion. You're almost never buying from Amazon. You're buying from a third-party seller whose inventory happens to be in an Amazon warehouse, and the entire experience has been engineered to make that fact invisible.
On AliExpress, the opposite is true. The marketplace nature is completely transparent, but the trade-off is uncertainty. Longer shipping, less consistency, a refund system that works but feels alien if you're used to Amazon's frictionless returns. Neither model is better in absolute terms. They're optimized for different things.
The open question I keep coming back to is whether they converge. AliExpress is building warehouses and pushing faster shipping. Amazon is expanding its third-party marketplace and recruiting more international sellers. In 10 years, will we still be able to tell the difference?
The logistics infrastructure gap is enormous. Amazon has spent decades and hundreds of billions of dollars building a domestic delivery network. You can't replicate that with a few overseas warehouses and a partnership with USPS. But if anyone has the capital and patience to try, it's Alibaba.
Something to watch. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing and for the tie story.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions about the hidden machinery of the internet, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.